Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Good thing is about you, Perry, is that you're a radio pro as well, so I don't need to tell you all the boring stuff about using the mic properly.
No. So you just talk it that way, don't you?
Yeah,
so
you can right. Hear yourself when you're on it, yeah.
Yep, sorted.
Joining me on today's episode of Ramble Meets is Perry Groves, notching up the best part of 400 appearances in a professional career spanning some 12 years. He is well known for being a part of the Arsenal team that won two league titles under George Graham and was always something of a cult hero at Highbury due to his exciting wing play and cheeky demeanour. His career was cut short cruelly by two serious injuries to his Achilles tendon, and he retired from the game at just 28 years of age. Of his signing for Arsenal at the age of 21, he said, "When people say it was a dream to play for the club they supported as a boy, for me it was real. It went way back with my family. They were my club." Welcome, Perry Groves.
How you doing?
How's that?
Actually, that sounds like I was quite a good player. You should be my agent. Perry Groves, Arsenal's second greatest Ginga player ever. Alan Ball was the first. Ray Parlour doesn't count. He was a Ginga in denial.
Perry, I wonder if you're a 16-year-old boy coming through now, knowing what you know about yourself, your skill set, and what you got up to as a player, do you think you'd have had the wherewithal to make it in the modern game today?
Yes, and the reason I say that is because I had an innate desire to be a professional footballer. Obviously, the lads now, the young lads coming through, I think a lot of them want to be professional footballers because of the fame and the money, not necessarily because they're really in love with football. And when I was playing, I can remember watching Match of the Day, which as a kid, that's the only time you saw football, really. Live football was only FA Cup final or England internationals. Yeah. And watching Match of the Day, when my dad used to let me stay up, I used to watch, I think it was Kojak or it was, that's one for the teenagers, isn't it?
Yeah, not even I remember
or
that.
Or Petrocelli or whatever.
Yeah.
And then watch a match today. I had no idea that the players that I was watching on telly got paid to play football.
Right.
Because when you're a kid, you don't think about that. No. You just think about you're playing for your school team, you're playing for your Sunday team. And I wanted to be them playing football on the telly because they were playing at the top level.
Yeah.
You know, the money thing didn't really come into it at all.
Mm.
Whereas I think a lot of younger players today and even parents, without getting too serious, I think they see the money and the fame and the profile more than just with the love of playing football. So I don't know what level I'd have got to because obviously when I was playing, for instance, to get to play for Arsenal, you had to be, as an apprentice, probably one of the best players in around London and maybe in the country. Now, to get to be a YHS, whatever, you've probably got to be one of the best young players in Europe, maybe. So the level I might not have got to the Arsenal's level, but I'd have definitely been a professional footballer because my desire was so big then if you've got a little bit of ability, then you've got half a chance.
And you've spoken quite self-deprecatingly about the fact that you were the runner, the busy guy, the kind of the try-harder in the team when compared to some of your Arsenal teammates. But, I mean, how much of that is self-deprecation and how much of that do you truly believe?
I never really... I've not been taught to talk myself up, basically, because my dad was always... I think he said... And my dad was my biggest fan when I was playing football. Biggest critic.
Yeah.
Best coach that I'd ever as a kid, because he knew football inside out. I think from when I was 6 to probably 16, he missed 2 games.
Wow.
And he was a long distance or a driver, used to get his job so that he knew he could drop him off and get back early, whether it's school football, whether it's Sunday football, county football. I think he said well played or well done twice in the 10 years. So, because he was always making me strive to be better and improve. And it's a weird thing. I don't think it's self-deprecating. I think it's just being honest and just knowing what your strengths and what your job is, because when I first started playing football as a kid, I was the best player in my school, best player in the Sunday team, best player in the league. I was a centre midfield player. I was someone who used to spray the ball around and had decent vision, decent technique, used to score some goals. So I made my name of being a controlling centre midfield player as a young kid. And we talk about Wolverhampton Wanderers lately, an apprentice, whatever. But then what happened when I played for Colchester's first team, and made my debut as a centre midfield player against Bournemouth, a new manager come in, Cyril Lee, and he was more the old route one, the old 80s, get it forward, get it in the chance.
And this is in the old fourth division?
On the old fourth division, muck and nettles, where you had the Noel pros coming out and just booting you everywhere, basically, especially if you're a young player coming in.
I mean, how bad was it at that time?
It was when I look back now, and I look at some of the games on BT Sport, you see some of the old clips and whatever. Yeah. That's like murder ball compared to what it is now.
Yeah.
And some of the fouls and things that are going on, and players just get up and get on with it. And so that was a good grounding. But then when Cyril Lewis came in, and I was very quick, even though I was a centre midfield player, I was always the quickest in whatever squad it was. But when you're playing centre midfield, you use it sporadically, a little bit. And then he said, you're going to play on the wing, on the right wing. And I thought, I've never been a right winger. And then I had to learn that. And then he didn't rate me at all. And then I just thought, I played for myself. I've got to be honest, I played for myself.
Right.
So that was me being a very quick winger. And then learning how to take people on. When you're playing centre midfield, you're a passer, you're a lender sort of thing.
Sure.
So I learned that and then made my name at Colchester with another ginger lad called Tony Adcock, who scored on bundles of goals.
He scored lots of goals, didn't he?
Yeah. And everybody's come and watch him.
Ended up at Man City, did he?
He scored a hat-trick against Huddersfield. Man City won 10-1 and he got a hat-trick.
Right.
One of the three players who got 3 goals.
Right.
But Tony Adcock was better technically than me and a brilliant finisher. But everybody's come, he was scoring bundles of goals. Everybody's come and watch him on a Friday night. So we were lucky at Colchester because all the scouts were there. To get their expenses or that bring their mistresses with them, like that was their weekend away.
To Colchester?
It's just a weekend away, and on a Friday night I've got to go work, love. You think, oh, who's that? Well, yeah. No. Then you see him on the Saturday with someone else. But then it was packed. Our director's box, a little small little director's box, Colchester, was because of Tony, and then I started playing, was absolutely packed with scouts trying to uncut diamonds from the lower league. That doesn't happen as much as what it used to. I think it's just starting to come back in again now.
With
the likes of Dele Alli obviously coming from
Vardy,
the league. Jordan Pickford going out on loan and whatever.
So let's go back to signing your first, because you mentioned Wolves there. You had an unsuccessful trial at Wolves.
It was a successful trial, but I went up at 14. And in the old days, it was schoolboy forms. And if you signed a schoolboy form, you had cute, by the way, in your local area, especially as well. And that sounds really, I grew up in Great Cornard in Sudbury in Suffolk, which is Gainsborough country. Wolverhampton Wanderers is another Wolves is another stratosphere, where it's like 5 hours away.
Well, how did that come about in the first place?
Again, old school stuff. My best mate, Warren Brown, his dad, Mick Brown, who was one of our managers, football managers, learned everything out of books, the old Charles Hughes like coaching manuals, whatever. Never played football, but had these random ideas. He used to write away for players that he felt were pretty good. He'd write away to get a trial. And he wrote to Nottingham Forest, to Wolves, Ipswich, all the East Anglian clubs, Southend, Peterborough, Colchester. And there was a player who was one of my heroes called Andy Lovelace, who played for Cornard Dynamos under 14s, 15s. He then got an apprenticeship at Colchester United, which is the first person ever around our area
that
got his first rung.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he looked like David Bowie. He was tall. And I think I had a bit of a man crush on him, really, even as a boy. You know what I mean? When you're 10, 11, the 15-year-olds are the men.
You looked up to him.
He was like a huge idol of mine.
Yeah.
And then you think, wow, someone's gone to a professional football club. If he can do it, then I can.
Yeah.
So Mick Brown wrote away to all the clubs and I got a trial at Wolves. And I can remember my dad, like, to this day. So Wolves is like a million miles away from where we are. So he's, so he got he was delivering kitchen cabinets at the time.
Hmm.
And so he got a drop off in the Midlands. So he could take, I had a trial on a Tuesday, I think. So I was sleeping in the back of the lorry, just having a kit, went up for a trial.
And you were 14?
14, yeah.
What did you think about this as a kid? Can you remember how you felt?
The excitement.
Were you nervous?
Yeah, I don't believe anybody, I still get nervous before I go on out for TalkSport, you know, like that.
Yeah.
I used to get nervous before every game. And I think if you don't get nervous, there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Exactly, because it's not worry nerves, it's excitement. It's you're worrying about your performance for your team, do you know what I mean? And then when you play at a high level, you've got 60,000 people, whatever.
Yeah.
But it was that butterfly feeling in your stomach.
Yeah.
And driving away, it took us about, I don't know, 5-6 hours to get up there or whatever, and then had a trial, went really well, and then they invited me back for another trial for 2 weeks because you're in school holidays. So you got, and I can remember thinking, oh great, my dad would take me up, and he took me to Sudbury train station, and he went, there you go boy, see you later. And I'm like, well, you didn't take me up. He went, he said, this is at 14, right, and I've never been to London on my own. He went, you want to be a footballer, sunshine? He said, you got to grow up pretty quickly. You got to be independent.
Wow.
So I got a train from, remember the journey, Sudbury to Mark's Tay, Mark's Tay into London, Liverpool Street, Liverpool Street across London to Euston, Euston up to the Birmingham train, which took you to Wolverhampton. Like,
blimey.
And I'm like, what do I do here? And like, I hadn't been on the tube, really. I'm a London boy, born in Bow, but moved out.
Sure.
And he went, well, you go, get on with it. And it was like part of growing up.
Okay. So what happened then?
So I went up for the 2 week trial. They really liked me. They offered me schoolboy forms.
I believe you made it.
Yeah, I know. thing is, I sort of bottled out a little bit. I didn't do the show. I got on a cab. I just thought, oh, you take me from like Liverpool Street to Euston. Yeah, just took the easy way out. I'm notoriously lazy. So got there, went well. The manager at the time was John Barnwell, and he'd played with my dad's uncle Vic Groves for Arsenal.
Mm-hmm.
So he was interested in that. He said, like, I've talked to the manager as well. Like, John Jarman was the youth team manager. And I remember signing, they offered me schoolboy forms, and I thought, this is incredible. It gives you a real sort of buzz, like a
course.
Your kudos goes up. You think, I'm going back, and it's very cosmopolitan would be the word. It's very
Exotic.
Exotic, yeah, because. Yeah. Me playing in local football, and then you get, well, that's Perry Groves. He plays for Wolverhampton Wanderers. He's a schoolboy.
Were you loving it?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it because you have to, I think when you play on the pitch, not off the pitch, when you play on the pitch, you have to have an ego.
Yeah.
You have to think you're better.
Yeah.
Not delusionally better than everybody else, but you have to carry yourself.
Of course.
And that gave me another little lift above everybody else.
So how did you wind up at Colchester United then?
They got, I remember, went up to Wolves all the school holidays and whatever, and then they send you a letter to tell you whether you're going to be an apprentice.
Mm-hmm.
And the apprentice, you sign like 16 to 18. Basically, you do the boots, the stand, sweep, everything.
All the stuff
rooms.
They don't do now.
Exactly, which they should do. No, they should do it because that gives you a rites of passage. You should be doing it. And remember the letter coming through, obviously through the letterbox, and me just reading it. Had the Wolverhampton Wanderers little wolf like headed on the envelope. And I didn't open it for two and a half hours because I knew that my future was in that letter.
She's such a young man as well, young boy,
16,
really.
16, my hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
And I remember reading it and I can remember opening it. And the first lines were, "Dear Perry, due to financial constraints, we are sorry to inform you we will not be offering you an apprenticeship at Wolverhampton Wanderers Football Club. Good luck with it." Basically read, "You're useless, ginger," whatever. That's a nice way of putting it. Like, first time I've had any rejection at all. Like, because best player in the team, best player in the school team, best player in the county.
Did you feel like you knew it was coming, or were you surprised?
No, surprised, because I still thought when I was going up there, I still thought I was the best player, or one of the four or five best players that I was going to take on. And I remember, I'm not particularly emotional because if my dad's an old East End, like, you don't cry, son, it's a sign of weakness.
Right, that's right.
I remember having a cry and I thought, my life done, I'm done. I'm never going to be a footballer, that's it, I'm finished.
Do you think that affected you long term?
No, because of my dad, and even though an old East End sort of tough man, he came back, he'd been working, come back, and like he'd seen, I was like, he said, what's the matter with you, boy? He always got, I don't think he remembered my name, even though I was only a child, he's always, boy, and he said, no, my name's Perry, Dad. Sorry, no.
You said, named me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It was going to be Purnell, by the way, so I got away with one. When people go, what's Perry about? I go, it was an actor called Purnell Roberts in the 50s.
Yeah, so great boxer as well, Purnell Whittaker.
Yeah. So I said, right, my mum said, no, I got my mum to thank for that. Really? So I got away like, anyway.
So you went the third great Purnell.
Yeah, so he went, so what's the matter? I went, they've told me I'm not going to be football dad. I'm done. I'm my dreams. I'm shattered. I'm like, he went, so what are you on about? And he went, he said, there's 92 clubs in the country.
Mm.
He said, there's another 91. He went, it was just very matter of fact. He went, he said, it's their opinion. He said, it's one person opinion. And he went, I'm not having this. He said, if you think that you can be a footballer and you have the desire and the heart, right, and the fight to be a footballer, I know that you can. It's the first time I'd ever heard him rate me, but I said, I know you can. He said, but it's no good me thinking it. You have to think it.
Mm.
You have to have the desire. Mm. He said, if you've got the desire, I will take you round every one of the other 91 clubs on trial.
Mm.
He said, but if you haven't and you're a bit flaky about it, let's not bother.
Yeah.
And I went, no, I have, Dad. I want to be a footballer. He went, right. So I went on trials again, just went on trials all around, went to Peterborough, went to Luton, went to Norwich, went to Ipswich. Obviously, Colchester United knew about me because I was a Wolverhampton Wanderers schoolboy in the fourth division.
Yeah.
Peterborough were going to sign me. Graham Scarf was their youth team manager at the time. Went trial there, playing centre midfield. He really rated me. Played against Spurs at their old training ground when they had a really good... Carl Hodder was playing in the city. They had a really good youth team at the time. We beat them 5-1 and I played really, really well. And Graham Scarf went... got to sign him straight at Peterborough in the old fourth division as well.
Mm.
Went up to sign on the Tuesday after the game on the Saturday at Spurs' training ground and played in a reserve team game. Peter Morris was the manager and I thought I was going to his office to sign apprentice forms. I thought, that's it, I'm the first step on the ladder.
You're done, yeah.
Played, went in the office, so my dad came in with me and Graham Scarf was there and he didn't look, you know, when you see someone, just their face ain't great and you just think, it's a bit strange.
Yeah.
So, he said, Perry, the manager wants to have a word, which is Peter Morris, the first team manager.
Yeah.
And he said, I've just had a look at his son. He said, I'm looking, and he said, you're not better than what we've got. He said, Tip, there's a bloke called Timmy. I hate the name Timmy.
To this day.
So weak. I hate the name Timmy anyway. Tim is next year. He said, he's better than you, right? And I went, he's 22.
Yeah.
And he was a pro at 22, right? Yeah. And I said, I'm 16.
Yeah.
And you're saying I'm not better than him? I said, well, I wouldn't expect to be anyway. So, and in the end, from behind me, my dad just come flying over the desk, grabbed Peter Morris by the throat, and pinned him up against the wall, and went for him. He said, "What you just said, obviously expletives or whatever."
Yeah.
And I'm there thinking, that's not the way to win hearts and minds. Then I'm like, it's not happening. So, yeah. And they said, "No, you're dumb."
So you must have had an incredible amount of resilience for such a young age. By this point, you dealt with knockbacks, you've been to different places and they not wanted to sign you. And for people listening, I mean, I'm 38 now and at 16, I was just a kid. I couldn't make any decision about anything, but you had to develop this amazing resilience.
Yeah, I think it was, again, from my dad, who's my biggest influencer. You probably is coming across now, the biggest influence on my career. 90% of it was positive. There's like 10% was negative because with my two boys, I did give them praise when they deserved it. Do you know what I mean? You can't just keep saying... Right.
No.
But I wanted to prove my dad, I must admit, but I wanted my dad's approval. I wanted his, do you know what I mean? I craved his approval. I craved a well done. So that probably spurred me on a little bit.
Mm.
Then the knockbacks, what should I say? I've got two boys, they're 10 boys. Lewis is 29 now, Drew's 27. But even when they were growing up, what I always kept in my head is there's no such thing as failure. It's not succeeding the first time. Because I don't know anybody who's been successful in anything where things haven't gone right from at a certain period of their time.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Even if you say David Beckham, they said he was too small, didn't they, when he was like 30, 40. So, and it's the way you react to, in inverted commas, fate. It's the people who succeed just go, right, no, I'm just going to try harder, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to be better.
Mm.
The people go, oh, I've had one little knock back there.
And
they're the ones that fall by the wayside.
Mm.
and I didn't want to be one of them. So
you wound up at Colchester, yeah. And you played there for quite a long time, really.
I was five. I made my debut at 16. Which got me a Vauxhall Viva, so I thought, hello again.
Did you really?
Yeah, my dad, again, he used to put these little things, and I can remember going to coach. I must have been such a flash little Herbert, because I remember signing for Colchester United in the Evening Gazette, which was the Colchester local paper.
Yeah. And, what year was this, Barry?
This was 81.
Okay.
So I was 16.
Yeah.
And so there's a picture of me with a broom, with me, you get your apprentice kit, so you don't have the same kit as the pros, quite rightly, because you haven't earned the right to it.
Yeah.
And I was number 22, was my apprentice number.
Yeah.
And they interviewed me and they said, what are your hopes, aspirations? So normally you'd say, well, I can't wait to play in the reserves and play with all these like brilliant players that we've got, like Steve Wignall, Mickey Cook, Steve Leslie.
And do you look up to these players at the time?
Yeah, because they were in the team. Roger Osborne, who'd scored the winning goal for Ipswich in the cup final in 1978,
yeah.
He was playing centre midfield.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm going to play. I said, and they said, well, what? I said, well, I should be. I expect to be in the first team by December.
Really?
Right? So, and you think if someone was advising you, go, no, don't say
that. Did you get hammered for saying
that? Oh, no, the senior pros. It was in the paper the next day. So I've gone in and I can hear Steve Wignall, like proper old senior pros, Mickey Cook, who played 500, 600, Steve Leslie, who sent me a field player. I can hear him like that little ginger. Who's he think he is? Yeah. And the next training session, I got booted everywhere. It's like, don't come in here, sunshine, and think you're going to
take my job.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but just looking back, you think, if I'd have had a manager agent, no, don't say that. Mm. So I said, started playing off well in reserves. This is my dad, just like in my ear, 16 playing in the reserves, because you either, if you was an apprentice, played in the youth team or the reserves, and then it was first team. So you're only one step away.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't play in the youth team because my performances were good, so I was playing in the reserves.
Yeah.
And of all the pros who weren't playing in the first team,
yeah,
playing really well. And it got to about November time, I remember Dad come watch me play, and he said, what's Bobby Roberts, the manager, what's he said to you about playing the first team? I went, well, nothing. Ray Bunkle was a very good coach. He used to coach me every afternoon. So, you know, it's people along your way who help you.
Yeah.
So I used to go back every afternoon. I was the worst apprentice ever, was rubbish at my jobs, was hiding all the time, going to kick the ball up against the wall over the far side. It's called Sporting News. And always getting fined, always sent to the manager.
You just didn't want to do the jobs?
No. My point was, no, I don't want to be the best dressing room sweeper in Colchester. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be the best boot cleaner. I want to be the best footballer.
Yeah.
And I was on 17 quid a week there as apprentice wages, and I was always getting fined £2
right
for not doing my jobs properly.
Yeah.
And Bobby Roberts was the manager going, oh, not you again. Albert Danzy, the old kit man, and Tom Chaney, the groundsman, were always moaning about me.
Right.
And I was staying with Tom in Diggs, the groundsman. He used to go and bubble me all the flipping time to the manager, getting fined. He said, you get in and say, get and see Bob Roberts and say, why ain't the first team? Well, I'm 16, by the way. And Bobby Roberts is this Glaswegian, Scottish, quite no, but very good. He's played for Leicester, very good player.
But a
brilliant
hard man.
Coach. Hard man, but a brilliant coach.
Yeah.
So I should go, and he go, is it? So it's Barry. It's, what do you want? Come in. So I sat down, he said, hey, what do you want? Like, yeah. I went, just thinking, I've been watching the first team play and keep giving the ball away a bit too much, and I'm playing the reserve player in the first team. And he went back, he's like, what did you, like, what? So why are you playing? He went, because you ain't good enough. I went, oh, yeah, I'm better than them. Why don't I play? Get out of my office, right? So this went on.
How many times did you do that?
I reckon once a month, honestly, from November. I'd only signed in September.
Yeah.
And just knocking on the door. And in the end, I think my dad kept saying to me, you're better than them. Get yourself in there, right? And Ray Bunkle was that. So I got a bit of a vibe. And then I remember a lad called Andy Goody, who I'd played for Riverside Wanderers in the under-16 with. He was like a man boy, you know, someone who's like 15 but really 28.
Yeah.
There was a lot of injuries and he was put on the bench before me.
Hairy chest and all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and a little moped when he's.
Some of the videos of you and when you're in your late 20s, you look young still.
Like Bross's younger brother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not quite as good looking, obviously. but so there was a load of injuries. And I remember Andy Goody, I'm thinking, I'm going to be on the bench.
Mm.
And I wasn't, he was. There was only one sub back in those days and he was a little bit older than me. And I was raging, absolutely not disappointed. I was raging, thinking, I've been better than him, and why aren't I on the bench?
Mm.
Next morning. Yeah. So then they got beat at home as well, like Colchester. So Bob Roberts obviously ain't very happy.
Yeah.
What do you want? Why aren't I on the bench last night? Because I'm the manager and I make the decisions.
Yeah.
But it's the wrong one. I'm 16. Like, it's wrong one. Got it completely wrong because you lost. Like, he must be thinking,
who is this?
He said, he went, right, like, he said, get out. like, get out of my office. I went, well, I don't get it. And as I walked out, he said, he was on the, in his large window, he said he was on the bench because he can play more positions than you, because he could play at right back, yeah. He could play centre forward. Right, right. Mm. So he said, not that I have to answer to you. And as I walked out, I thought, yeah, but you did.
You did now. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
So, and then again, the season went on, and in the old days, there was no playoffs. So if you're not in top four, used to go up,
yeah.
Bottom four used to come down.
Mm.
So if you weren't in the top four, you had no chance.
Mm.
There's a good chance if you were any good as a young player, there was nothing to play. We were about seventh or eighth. Anyway, so because of that, in April, I remember he put me in the first team squad. It goes out in the old days, a bit of paper,
yeah.
You know, from a notepad that went up on the board in the dressing room. And I was in the squad. So then you used to meet at the George Hotel in Colchester for a pre-match. And that was, I think, probably my... The only time you ever had a pre-match is when I was playing the reserves. Is it was a long reserve, like if we were playing Wisbit. I know
a long trip.
Yeah, long trip. You might get beans on toast or something. But that was my first proper pre-match meal with the first team.
What did you have?
I had beans on toast, cornflakes first, then like beans on toast.
Yeah.
And they weren't really paying attention, really. I thought, oh, I'm in the squad. Great, I'm with the first team, suit and tie and all that sort of stuff. And then I remember him, like, Bobby Roberts reading out the team. You know, Mick Walker, the old Norwich and Everton manager, Mick Walker was in Cole, had the most unimaginative nickname I've ever seen in football.
Yeah.
He came, he lived in Bewers, which was just outside Sudbury, and his nickname was Bewers. Right. It's not exactly imaginative, is it?
No. No.
I think he managed to come from Catford or anywhere. So he was in goal. Mickey Cook, he went Mickey Cook, Steve Wignall, Steve Wright, I think it was Mickey Packer left back, and he went, it was always 4-4-2 in the old days.
Your memory about all this is really good, by the way.
Well, no, because it's part of me, that's my football, you know what I mean? It's what I love doing. And he said,
but I've had people in here who can't remember who their debut was against and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, they must have been on something then, because you cannot not remember your debut.
Yeah, well.
And it was like, Tony Adcock was playing as a winger then, not as a forward, because he was young. And he said, and sent me a field, we go, Roger Osborne, Perry Groves, Ian Anderson, who went on to play for Arsenal.
Yeah.
Up front, Ken Bremner, Roy McDonough. And I wasn't really paying attention, right? And then
Roy McDonough played up front.
Roy McDonough, yeah.
Did he?
Yeah, he was good, really good mate of mine. I wasn't a drinker then. He was like
one of the hardest men to ever play football.
Yeah, the nicest man off the pitch.
Right.
One of the nicest men, softest off the pitch, on the pitch. If you took liberties then.
Were you a bit scared of him?
No, because.
He's not on your team.
No, because he really helped me out as well as a senior player. He was only about 24, 25 then, but he was the Playboy senior player. So it was like play hard, you know, like drink hard, play hard, work hard, whatever.
Yeah.
And, so when we walked out the George, there was a bit of a buzz and someone said, congratulations, like that. And I weren't really paying attention. And then as we got to the first team dressing room at Lower Road, and then obviously the kits 1 to 11 all laid out and your boots were always put on. And I just looked around and thought they were Adidas World Cups.
Mm. Like the classics.
Yeah. So I thought, it's number four. And I thought, my boots are under number four. And I thought, oh my God, I'm playing. I didn't really take any notice of it because I wasn't playing. And then I said, playing. So I played, obviously, like 16.
Were you nervous?
Yeah. You've got to be. But the thing is, as well, looking back, I say the debut's your easiest game because it's a free game.
Yeah.
If you're a young player, the fans want you to do well.
Yeah.
And if you make a few mistakes, go, oh, hey, he's all right. They'll think about the good stuff rather than the bad stuff.
Yeah.
So really, as a debut, it's a free hit. I mean, if you're coming in at 85 million quid, then maybe that might be a little bit different. But yeah, it's a free hit. And I remember playing midfield. I can remember playing quite well.
And you had a good time at Colchester. You played a lot of time, 150 odd, 162 times.
Well, I got dropped. I played the last 9 games of that season with Roger Osborne centre midfield. Played the first 13 games of the next season in centre midfield. Alan Hunter became our manager, the old Ipswich, like Northern Ireland, really another tough like man as well, was pretty good for me. And we lost the 13th game 2-1 away at Scunthorpe. And we were playing Southampton the next midweek. A massive game for Colchester, the biggest game that Colchester have had for probably 10 years. And Southampton had Peter Shilton, Alan Ball, Steve Williams.
A good team there.
Oh, good side, yeah. Just like David Pitt, I think, was like left back and just a real good team. And I think that's great. They were first division at the time. Great showcase for me.
Mm.
Playing in like a practice game. And Cyril Lee, the coach, just gave me like a different colour bib to the first team. And I'm like, I said, no, sorry. Sid, give me he said, we're just trying a few things, like, just like that. So I'm like, all right. So I just run around booting everybody because I had jump. And then thought I was going to play still. Got to the game on the Tuesday night. Again, my boots not on number four. And I'm looking, thinking I've got to be at least not even sub. So all my mates had come to watch me play.
Oh, gutting. Yeah.
And my dad, big game, Layer Road. Was the, oh, I don't know if you went.
I've never been misfortune. To Layer Road.
Yeah,
though.
You're lucky if you didn't get a disease, to be fair. You need okay. But it's an old-fashioned ground, wooden stands and tight pitch. And I think there was about 8,000-9,000 in, which was a big crowd then. I was used to playing in front of 1,800s, 2,000.
Right.
And then my mate said they just saw me sitting up in the director's box with my sheepskin coat like that, thinking, oh, he must be injured. And I was dropped.
Gutting.
And it was supposed to be the biggest game of my life, dropped. And then I had my driving test the next day, failed that. So that wasn't
a terrible couple of days for you. Yeah.
How are you going?
Yeah.
Not good. But then I got dropped. Didn't play for the rest of that season, playing in reserves. And then they wanted to get rid of me at the end of that season. They called me Cyril Lee, taken over as manager by then. Mm. And he was all about fitness and running and getting the ball forward. And he said, Perry, we're going to let you go. And I said, well, I've got a year. I still had a year left. I had a year left contract. So we're going to let you go. I went, no, it's ridiculous again. I was on 100 quid a week. Mm. Right, I said, well, give me $5,000 then.
Mm.
And he went, what do you mean? I went, well, I'm not just going to go.
Still got a year left,
pay me off. He went, you flash little, get out of my office. He said, you will never play for this first team again whilst I'm manager.
Right.
So then I played in reserves, played on the right wing, basically played for myself and got myself back into the first team.
Yeah.
And then started playing well and scoring a few goals. I think I got 12 one season, 15 the next. Which puts you in people's...
Sure, like, and in September of 86, you moved to Arsenal for $50,000.
75.
What, 75, was it?
Well, that's what George Graham told me.
Oh. Yeah, the less about that, the better.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
What sort of player did Arsenal get for 50 or 75 grand?
Massive desire. I may keep going about this desire thing.
Yeah. But what do you think they signed you for? Why did they sign you?
George Graham had seen me play for... He was youth team manager at QPR.
Mm.
And he'd seen me play for Colchester youth team against QPR youth team on the old plastic pitch at Loftus Road.
Mm-hmm.
They had, again, a brilliant side. David Kerslake was one who came, like, mm-hmm. playing. They had about four or five England schoolboys. We had four full-time ones and all the other lads were at college sort of thing.
Right.
We got battered 7-0. And when I was sitting in his office when I went to sign for Arsenal, he looked at me, George Graham, he said, "I've what's your career of interest?" He said, "Oh, I can remember you as a 16-year-old playing in the youth team at Colchester against QPR." And I think, oh, I must have played well. He said, yeah, it was 7. I said, it was 7-0, that one. He went, yeah, 7-0. I said, didn't play. He said, no. He said, all you did is run around and moan. He said, all you did, you moaned at people. You moaned at your own teammates. You moaned at your coaches. You moaned at everybody.
Yeah.
I went, well, what's that? He said, no, it meant that you cared. He said, I could tell that you could play. He said, but when he was 5-0 down, 6-0 down, 7-0 down, I wasn't interested in the game anymore. I was watching you
moaning
at everybody, still trying to tackle, still trying
showing
to
the desire,
desire again. Yeah. And he said, then obviously I got in the first team coach. So he tried to buy me when he was Millwall manager, to play up front. Justin Fashion was playing up front for Millwall. And he tried to buy me $40,000 and coach said no. And then I thought I was going to Crystal Palace because I'd been tapped up by Crystal Palace mm-hmm. before. And, Alan Smith, the old Alan Smith, not my big nose Alan Smith, yeah, yeah. but the coach Alan Smith had phoned me up. Steve Copper was the manager of Crystal Palace and said, we're in the second division. So it's a big jump. Again, fourth to second would be like big jump. We've been watching you play. We're having a new young team at Crystal Palace. We're going to be vibrant. You know, we're going to be young players with desire and pace. We've just seen this young lad play up front, Sunday League football in South London, called Ian Wright.
Righty, yeah.
And I thought, what's he done? You know what I mean? Yeah. Where's he go? Right. Yeah. So they wanted me to play up front with him. And I thought, well, I can't play centre forward. I can't hit a cow's backside of a banjo. Why do you want me to play centre forward? Because I was quick.
Yeah.
So when my financial advisor, John Hazel, and I don't know why I had a financial advisor really, because he used to tell me what I could do with my money if I had some, even though I didn't, and then charge me for the privilege. But he was brilliant. John Hazel was brilliant. He got my pension. And he phoned me up on September the 2nd and said, Perry, our coach had a bid in for you. It was $75,000, I think it was. And he said, we got a bit at Highbury on Thursday, which was like September the 4th. I went, shut up, John. I said, I'm not going to Arsenal. I'm going Crystal Palace.
Yeah.
I know I'm going Crystal Palace.
And you're a big Arsenal fan, right?
Huge, yeah. Like my family, Uncle Vic played, my dad.
So this is a proud moment for you and your dad after all the work you put in.
Yeah, but I didn't think I was, no, honestly, I thought I was going to Crystal Palace. Yeah. And I thought he was winding me up. So got on the train he said, right, when we get there, I've got obviously what we're going to ask for. I sort of know their wage structure. You know, we want a like 3-year contract. And he kept, I said, I've got to stop you there, John. You're being really funny. I'm an Arsenal fan. I know I'm going to Crystal Palace. And I still didn't believe him. We end up going on the Piccadilly line to Arsenal, turn left out of our shoe stage and turn right up at Avon Road. And I said to him, pack it in. But in my head, my weird brain, I just thought, I know what we're doing. It's a clandestine meeting. It's a South London club.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
You just couldn't believe it?
No. So I walked up Avenue Road and just looked at, obviously, like the main entrance at East Stand.
As it was then at Highbury,
And just looked at that. And then in the old days, they had a commissionaire on the door at the Marble Halls called Nobby, and he had all the regalia with the hat and the braids and all that sort of stuff. And he said, good morning, Mr. Hazel. Welcome to Highbury, like that. And I thought, he knows his name because it was George Graham's.
So you're doing all these rhetorical gymnastics trying to get to the bottom of what
you're
there.
And then he went, good morning, Mr. Groves. Welcome to Highbury. I just thought, he knows my name.
Yeah.
Oh my God, he knows my name. And that's when it like clicked in and thought, no, this is...
Would you have signed for any amount?
Yeah.
Wages?
How can I negotiate?
Yeah.
By the way, I'm 150 quid a week at Coach United and they go, look, we'll give you... I go, no, I don't think so.
Would you have signed for 100 quid a week? A pay cut?
I wouldn't have been that stupid. No, I wouldn't have. I probably would have signed for the same money, to be honest. But I can remember him just sitting there and just being overwhelmed by the enormity of Highbury. And I've been there a few times before, obviously, to watch Ian Anderson play, who'd gone from Colchester, and then, like with my dad and whatever, and just going up the old marble halls, like the staircase up the marble halls, and George Graham having this massive oak door, like the biggest oak door you've ever seen in his office at Highbury. And you know, like the Wizard of Oz, when he met the wizard and he's got the biggest chair you've ever seen.
Yeah, he's tiny.
He was sat on the massive chair and he put me on like a little milking stool. So he's sitting up there. And he went on about what I told you about QPR and saw me play. And he said, I'm restructuring. I remember the words. He said, I'm going to completely redefine and restructure this football club. He said, it's too complacent, too many big players on too much money who don't work. He said, I'm putting the desire, the heart and the soul back into this football club. That's exactly what he said. So I've seen you play. Obviously, you followed your career. You've got massive desire, massive heart. He said, you're a bit raw, which obviously I was, you know, from fourth to... He said, we can smooth those edges off you. He said, but I want you to be like part of Arsenal.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, that's pretty... And I was his first signing, which was normally your first signing is a huge statement, isn't it? Like, so the fans go, wow, we mean business. And it was like, who's this ginger from Colchester?
Did they get a lot of negative press then at the time?
Not really. Do you know what? I think it sort of, by the way, Colchester signed...
It was like under the radar.
Yeah, it was just like 75 grand. And even the fans would have been, what's that? Is that really like what we're doing? We're signing from Colchester United. And he offered me 350 quid a week. It was a 3-year contract. And I thought, oh my good God, 3 years. I'd only ever signed, my first contract when I was 17 because I signed early instead of having the last year of the apprenticeship. So 17 to 19.
Yeah.
Always a year, because Colchester United didn't know what money they had.
Sure.
So 3-year contract, £350 a week, £5,000 signed non-fee, and £5,000 relocation. So it means we want you to move closer to London. We'll pay for that for you. And I thought, oh my God, I can buy a yacht. I can buy a... No, I thought I was going from 150 to 350. It's a huge... I know it sounds ridiculous now. It's a huge...
It's 120% pay rise.
Yeah, and I'm like... Well, and again, it's not because of the money. You just think, I've got a 3-year contract.
But it didn't affect you in terms... It didn't make you complacent.
No.
It didn't make you comfortable. You still wanted to prove yourself because you loved Arsenal.
Remember, I went from being... Probably Tony Adcock would, you know, not disagree, but he'd have something to say about it, for being Colchester United's best player to... Arsenal's in the first team, Arsenal's worst player, because no one knows who I am. I'm gone to bottom
of
the
rung. Do you think you were actually Arsenal's worst player?
No, because what I mean is by that...
Reputation, you mean?
Yeah, because I'm Billy Nobody, so I go from being top of the ladder at Colchester United to bottom of the ladder at Arsenal, because you've got to prove yourself again. No one knows you. I remember phoning my dad up from the telephone box right outside Highbury, and he thought I was going to Crystal Palace, and phoning him up, the old... Well, you know, for the
Tempe
young ones
the
out
gym.
There, Tempe in the the pay phone, whatever, doing the come around that car. All right, Dad, he said, all right, boy. I said, yeah. He said, let go. I said, I've just signed for Arsenal. And he went off.
Did he?
I went, even my dad didn't believe me. I went, no, Dad, I have. He went silent. I went, Dad, I've made it. He went, no, you ain't.
Yeah.
He said, you've just started.
Yeah.
I went, yeah. All right. He said,
you got to start.
You're bottom of rung. Yeah, you're bottom of rung.
And how do you remember? What do you remember your first day training at Arsenal? Must have
it was on a. Moment. It was really strange because I signed on the Thursday. Arsenal were playing Spurs on the Saturday, like local derby, and David Pleat was the manager of Spurs at the time.
Yeah.
So the gaffer said, "Go home, get all your boots, whatever. Come back and train with the first team on the Friday morning because the reserves had a game, but they'd already named their team, even the reserves.
Yeah.
He said, so I just train with the first team. He said, but don't get used to it because you ain't going to be in the first team squad for a while. So I remember then when on a Friday, George Graham always did the same thing. He did some team shape. He did your warm up, did your team shape, did set pieces, and then did like a little five-a-side at the end of it. And I remember feeling really nervous because you think everybody's looking at you, even in like the warm up, even in the set, in the shadow play.
Who was the biggest name player at the time there?
Charlie Nicholas would have been.
Cool.
Yeah.
Champagne Charlie,
exactly. Yeah. So.
Are you set up in the League Cup final, is that right?
Yeah, he never thanked me, got a 2-year contract for that. He was on his way out the door. No, he was. He was on his way out the door.
And you did all the hard work as well.
And he did, he had an identity crisis for about two. He thought he was Bono for 2 years.
Yeah.
Same Barnett and whatever.
He's still got the earring.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I don't know, he's a bit old, isn't it?
It's not for me to say.
Anyway, but he's Charlie Nicholas, so he can get away with it, can't he?
So he was the one who was like...
He was the big star, and then I can remember turning up for training, and there was Viv Anderson, Kenny Sansom, Graham, all like established
English
big
players,
internationals,
English
right?
Yeah.
Steve Williams, like big stars.
Was the standard noticeably different?
Yes, quicker, sharper. They thought quicker. They knew what I was going to do before the ball cut. In the little five-a-side that I played in, I was breathing out my backside, and it was only a five-a-side because it was very, very quick, very, very sharp.
Did you ever think you weren't going to be good enough?
No, I didn't. I just really enjoyed it. I'd really, you know, you get over the nerves, and even playing in, I was nervous because they're judging you, but you always get judged. It doesn't matter if you're, as you said, I'm Harry Maguire, 80, 85, you're still getting judged.
Yeah.
You're still getting judged in training and what you do. I can remember taking corners with David Rowcastle and... The gaffer liked a right footer taken from left to either to ping it into the near post or bend it in. Do you know what I mean? We were very good on set pieces. And I can remember just every... Because it's like being a new kid at school with a bag of sweets. Like me and Rocky. And I'd heard of him playing England under 21s and he was the next big thing coming through.
Yeah.
Brilliant bloke. Really, really made me feel really welcome. And him taking a couple of really bad corners. And I was going, that's a great corner, mate. Excellent. I said, there's no movement in front there. So he got right like that. And he must be thinking, what are you on about? Yeah. I just wanted to be his friend.
Yeah,
and
of course.
Then,
okay.
And then
right.
I took a couple of corners and pinged them into the like near posts. And I just thought, that
settled you down a bit.
Yeah, and but it gives you, I know it's stupid and you're only taking corners, but then the other players will look at me thinking, well, I wonder if he can put it at the near post or whatever. So, and then... Remember David Pleat having that training session and then turning up for the game next day. I wasn't involved at all, just come watch the game. And I remember him coming into the Marble Halls and me just standing there getting my comp tickets, whatever, to watch the game. I remember him coming and said, young man, I said, Perry, congratulations. Like, shook my hand. He went, been looking at you for a long time, long time. He said, if George hadn't, he was with like the gaffer, he said, he hadn't have bought you, I would have.
Oh, really?
Right? Yeah, and I just went, no, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
No, not. And he took what I went, well, you had the chance.
Yeah. Like, did you? You were quite cocky then.
Yeah, yeah, even then. Yeah. You think, oh, shut up. Don't give me that. I hate it when people come up and say,
oh, this is what I would have
always
done.
Fancied you. Yeah, always knew you were going to make
after
it.
After timing, basically. Yeah.
And when even your manager now go, yeah, we looked at him, we could have bought him.
Yeah.
As if so, mate, they're aware of the talent or whatever. You think, yeah. Well, if you could, you should have done it then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And you went in quite, I mean, I think I'm right in saying you went from Colchester in 86 to winning the League Cup in 87. So probably in under a year, you've gone from that to winning a bit of silverware. That must have been quite a turnaround for you.
Looking back, when you're in it, you don't think it's that, because you're just playing, aren't you?
Yeah,
just doing your stuff.
Yeah.
But I remember watching Kenny Sansom.
So from fourth division to winning the League Cup in under a year, basically.
And, yeah, and Arsenal hadn't won a trophy since 1979.
Mm-hmm.
The League Cup was a big trophy back then because we're bound for Europe, so you could only win the league, which Arsenal weren't going to do, FA Cup or League Cup. League Cup was huge.
Mm.
And I can remember just thinking at the end of, when we'd won it, and about middle of April, because I think I might be wrong. I think it was April the 6th was the final. It was 4-4 the 6th. It was one of the two. Mm. And I think it was the 6th, actually. And sitting there, and you got a replica of the Littlewoods, when you won it, you got a replica of the Littlewoods Cup trophy. So,
yeah.
Right. And looking at it thinking, in the summer, I was watching my captain, Kenny Sansom, playing the World Cup.
Yeah.
Thinking, not even thinking, wow, playing in the World Cup.
What player he was, by the way.
Yeah, Kenny. I think him and Ashley Cole, probably the two... I know Arsenal fans want to hear it, but
yeah.
I know what Ashley Cole didn't go down well, but he was still a brilliant player.
Yeah.
Right? And I think Kenny Sansom, there's not a lot between them two. Kenny Sansom had a longer throw, so I might go for Kenny, to be fair.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Him playing for England in the 80s, and then like winning the League Cup with him as the captain. And
you played a part in the final, as we've already mentioned.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'd been injured. It was between me or Ian Allanson who was going to be. It was the first time that there was ever two subs. They experimented that season in the League Cup with two subs. And Ian had done really, he'd scored at White Hart Lane, massive goal, because we'd lost 1-0 at home in the first leg. And I played the whole game, but done my ankle. Won the next two at White Hart Lane, won the next one 2-1, and then they flipped a coin where was he going to play, and it was back at White Hart Lane again, won that one 2-1, and Ali scored one of the really important goals.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, so I was the difference between winning 1-0 at home and losing 1-0 at home and winning 2-1 away. So that's the difference I made. Mm. So, and it was between me and him who was going to be the other substitute, and I got it in front of Al.
And you made a difference. He justified the manager's selection.
Yeah, he just went, it was red hot day. And Liverpool as well, it made it a massive final. And Arsenal fans thought we're back because it was against Liverpool, who were the best team in the country.
Mm.
Probably, even though we're bound from Europe, probably the best team in Europe as well, even back in those days.
Like, they're an incredible side.
Yeah, yeah, Alan Hansen like at the back, with Steve McMahon in like centre midfield. Yeah. Rush, it was his last game up front. And they went 1-0 up, and they'd never lost when Ian Rush had scored.
Right.
And everybody says to me, did you think about it? You think, no, not really. Don't really think about that thing. We're exactly a bit consumed by other stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember it was 1-1. Charlie had scored quite a scruffy goal, like to equalise. And then I remember the gaffer just saying, like, putting me, said, Groves, you're going on. I think it was about, I don't know, 20 minutes to go, whatever it was. And he said, look, he said, the two centre halves are breathing out their backsides. He said, Gary Gillespie's not a right back, he's normally a centre half.
That's right.
He said, all I want you to do, he said, when we get it, he said, like, Quinny was playing up front. He said, obviously, Quinny come off, Charlie stayed on. He said, when we get it, he said, all I want you to do is come. I said, I want you spinning in the channel. Just spinning in the channel. He said, they're breathing out the backsides. I want you getting in behind. I want you to
stretch. The last thing they want, a quick player like you coming
off the
bench.
Well, to be fair to Alan Hansen, to be fair to him, he did say, because he'd known, obviously, that I was really quick. And I'd played 22 games at the beginning when I got in the team. Graham Ricks got injured. He was a left winger. And George Graham pulled me in. He said, Ricks got injured.
Hmm.
He said, can you play left wing?
Right.
I went, yeah, of course I can.
Yeah.
So I played 18 months at Colchester. I'd never played there in my life before. So I got in the team.
You get away with that back in those days because they wouldn't have seen it.
No, exactly, yeah. So I made my dad. We went 22 unbeaten. So I played some left wing, some right wing, and he played me up front with Quinny. And we went 22 unbeaten. And then I've got injured or we lost. So I got dropped, got myself back in. And he just said, get in behind. And Alan Hansen said, the last thing you want and any defender wants in the last 25 minutes of a game, when it's, even if it's not warm, but when you're breathing quite heavy, you don't think, oh no, I don't want a runner.
Of course,
anything else
yeah.
apart from runner. So that's why when I'm looking at games, I do the co-commentaries for TalkSport. If I see someone who's quick on the bench, say, look, this is the time to put them on now. Because, and that's what you want. And then Kenny Sansom hoofed the ball up the left wing. Yeah, yeah. I made it into a pass. It was a hoof. He's like,
and you just think it was the best left backing in the world.
Yeah, no, but it was a hoof. It was under pressure. So I just bent my run. And I can remember as the ball went down the left touchline, you get a fit. When you're playing football, sometimes you get a feeling of where people are. You don't actually see them. You just get this feeling.
Yeah.
And I had this feeling that Gary Gillespie was coming in from my right-hand side. Hmm. And
he dinked it past him.
Yeah, I thought he's going
to... He sold himself, to be fair.
Exactly, but
it was a tired challenge, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I thought he's going to... He's not going on a run. Again, it goes through very quickly for your mind. Yeah. I thought, he's going to dive in. And I thought, I'd flicked it, as he sort of slid in, I think he's still going for a coffee. And
it looked really good, Perry, I have to say. It looked really good.
I just flipped it over him and then cut in.
Hmm.
If I was on the right-hand side, I'd have shot. But because I was on the left-hand side, my left foot is my weaker foot.
Yeah. And well, scored a few of your left, didn't you?
Yeah, but that was without thinking.
Yeah, okay.
I had time to think.
Yeah, okay.
Good finishers are brilliant finishers when they've got time to think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That's when your clinical stuff comes.
But that wasn't you.
That wasn't me at all. I wasn't a natural finisher anyway, not a natural. And as I was running through, I was thinking, am I going to shoot? And I think, no. Again, it's going for your head. No, don't shoot, you idiot. He said, like, left footed, it could go anywhere.
Yeah.
So I thought, and I looked, and Charlie was on the inside of him. I just thought, right, I'll roll it to him. And to make a change for me, the pace of the pass was quite good. It just like rolled it into him. And he hit it, and there was like 15 deflections.
When
it
bomb.
And then Bruce Grobber went wrong and it
pinballed
nestled.
In. Yeah.
That was the end of the Arsenal fans, at that end.
Yeah. So, and that was history.
Went Bazo.
Yeah, you did. And how do you look back on your time at Arsenal? Because, of course, the famous Michael Thomas league title, and you won two league titles there, and there's a lot was made, the drinking culture and all the rest of it. And you've spoken about that in the past.
Yeah.
How do you look back on your time at Arsenal?
Privileged. Honoured. A little bit humbled as well, because sometimes it's a zeitgeist thing, right place, right time, manager.
Yeah.
George Graham, which is Unai Emery's trying to do now, change the culture, you know, get the high earners out, get the young. And if you think as well, George Graham, we wouldn't be at the Emirates if it wasn't for him, because he put that winning mentality back in. If you think the young players that he put into the side, going from Tony Adams to Dave Ruckhouse to Michael Thomas, Paul Merson, do you know what I mean? Martin Hayes, Niall Quinn, and then going to get players from lower leagues, like Kevin Richardson, Steve Bold, Lee Dixon, Nigel Winterburn, Alan Smith.
The recruitment was amazing.
Unbelievable. And you know what he used to do? He, when I spoke to him a couple of times, before the internet in those days, people forget the internet didn't work. Right. He used to get his secretary, Sheila, all the papers from around the country, the local football. So in East Anglia, it was called the Greenan. Yeah. I think in Manchester, it was the Pinken or wherever it was, or Liverpool Pinken. Get her to get all of those sent to him on a Monday, used to read all of the reports of the lower leagues and just see who scored, who's getting good reports, then phone up the local reporter and say, right, see this lad, say it was Tony Adcock, who's this lad, what's he like, Tony Adcock, and phone up the reporter who'd seen him play all the time.
Okay. So he's using it almost like a scouting network.
Scouting it, and then send the scouts to go and watch him. So,
right.
And I look back as well, like a period of time where, if you'd have said to me, when I wanted to be professional, one, I did it, and become professional football was great. And I got paid, which is, I hate all these people moaning now about the pressure and, you know, but you're getting paid to do something that you love doing. You're in a very, very privileged position of probably 1% of the...
Do you think people forget about that too often?
Yeah, and I think with agents in their ear holes, they forget, they don't conduct self. We have Koscielny not conduct self prop like an idiot, basically.
Yeah.
And you think, whoa, you're doing something that people will give both their arms for, not one right arm, both their arms for. And then look back, and you said to me at the end of your career, you said it finished at 30. It was 28 already, because I snapped my Achilles tendon, which was, sorry, Southampton fans, waste of money. I've said it before, but I didn't mean to snap my Achilles tendon.
No.
But if you'd said to me, by the way, at the end of it, one, you'd have had a minute playing for Arsenal in a first team game.
Yeah.
I'd have gone, that'll do me. Then playing over, I think it was over 200 games or whatever it was, with cup games and whatever.
Of course.
Then winning a major trophy, then winning, being on the pitch at the most iconic game that has ever been. Everybody says about, obviously, the Aguero moment.
Yeah.
That's nowhere near the 89 Michael Thomas. Nowhere near it, because they could win. They'd won the FA Cup. They could win the title. We're going to Anfield.
I mean, that decoy run you made.
I took the whole back four. You know your coaching badges, Luke.
Yeah.
I took the whole back four. But again, but I know we're probably running out of time, but that me being on the pitch there as an Arsenal fan, watching that happen in slow motion when it closed down, and then
the best
winning
seat in the house,
and without paying, and then being part of the squad that had only lost one game and won the title in 1990-91, which that team is very, very underrated, by the way, doesn't get mentions, and playing, I think I played 13 full games that year and 19 as sub. So apart from the back four, I was the one who was involved in. If you'd have said to me, "Anyway, that's what you're going to do," I'd have gone, Really?
That's dream stuff.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. No, and people say, oh, you finished at 28 in your pro. No. I think about from 16 to 28, the 12 years.
Yeah.
Not the years that I could have had.
But even then you said about your Arsenal time, I knew my role was to run around and be a bit of a nuisance.
That was it. But then what it was, run around, be a bit of a nuisance, know your job. There's too many players now that think they're better than what they are and don't do what they're putting the team to do. Mm. I mean, that's being very basic about it, because you still have to know where to run, when to run. Your touch has to be half decent. But know what your role is. Don't over-elaborate. And I can remember, even when I was playing on the wing, I used to come inside and George Graham would say, You come inside once more. I know it's the fashion now is for wingers to come inside.
But that was always seen as like the coward's way out, wasn't it?
Coming inside.
Because you wouldn't try and beat your man
exactly.
and get a crossing. Yeah.
And he used to teach me, he said, look, they know you're quick, whatever. If he shows you inside, knock it inside past him and go. He said, don't I remember doing a foot, Michael Flatley foot over once, like fingers like that. And he said, whoa, stop it. He said, what are you doing? You're not good enough to do that.
Really?
He said, what you do is you get it up to the, you go on the, you tack the inside shoulder, you knock it on the outside because you try and get them turned and you use your pace. He said, don't be doing that. If you do it, you're going to get the hook.
So you look back on it as a dream time, really. And I've got to ask you very quickly, because you're right, we are running out of time, but I do need to ask you, you're a guy who went and played for your dream club, you're a cult hero there, you're very popular there now, you're on cloud nine, winning trophies. When you had to retire at 28 and you couldn't play football anymore...
30,
okay.
2 years. No, 28,
You didn't really play beyond 28 much.
No, done.
Okay, so you retire at 30.
Yeah.
We've seen athletes now look back, professional athletes, and say it was very hard, if not impossible, to replace that buzz, to replace that lifestyle. You've gone with somebody right up there to right down there very, very quickly.
Yeah.
How difficult did you find that to cope with?
Looking back, I don't think I did, because of the realisation of trying to get back fit. You know, I was struggling.
So you were almost putting it off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, basically what I did was I got drunk for a year. Tried to find myself, and then every time I turned up at the wine bar, I'd already left. So that took me in front.
Right.
And then...
Did it hit you hard, though? Is that why you were drinking?
No, I don't think so. I think that's an easy excuse. I just thought... I discovered Friday night. I never had Friday night. All my mates were going out drinking at 5 o'clock on a Friday.
So despite your character, you were still very dedicated about not going out?
Didn't do that. All this rubbish, you know, like the drinking culture at Arsenal, the Tuesday club, whatever.
Yeah.
And people saying, that they were hungover in the game on a Saturday. And it's a load of rubbish. No, they weren't. You can't play top-level football being hungover. Trust me, it doesn't work.
So you'd confine your booze into...
Tuesday, maybe a Wednesday-ish, but not normally, if you was married, you went home, you had to make your way home on the Wednesday because you couldn't get away with like two nights.
Can't get away with that now at all, by the way.
No chance. But everybody was doing it. It weren't just Arsenal were doing it. Yeah. We were just a lot better at it than anybody.
Yeah,
But everybody, if you think of the big teams back in there, Liverpool, they had a big drinking squad when they were in the 80s.
Man United famously.
Man United had a huge drink. Everton went with Peter Reid.
It was just part of it.
It's part of the culture.
Yeah.
So, I didn't, I'm not one of these ones who look back and think, poor me. So I think, right, and then I got divorced, which was my fault completely. And then you go from thinking I'd sort of retired at sort of 32, 33, because I got an insurance payoff from Southampton, which I won't go into that. It's a battle for that. But then thinking, I've got divorced, I've got two young boys. I've now got to go and the real world. I've got to pay for my boys. So I've got to go and get a job. So I went and got a job in direct sales from my mate's firm, who was doing the fruit flavoured water and flapjacks and all that stuff. So didn't have time, really.
So it was just like you approached it in almost a practical way. You didn't have time to think about the implications on your mental health. Or just like, look, I've got to do this. I've now got to go and earn. I'm off to go and earn.
Yeah.
And that was it.
That was it. It was like, I had a great time. That was fantastic. Can't believe it. You don't, sit back and think how great you've done, whatever. You just think, that was amazing. And then I'm lucky enough to do the media now, which again is such a privilege. You're in the media yourself. We talk about football.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So
it's a great job.
With TalkSport, I did some Five Live TalkSport. But I was in the real world for like 8 years doing direct sales and franchises and all that sort of stuff. Mm. So when people moan now, if anybody moan about football, you know what they're going to say, don't do it.
Yeah, if you don't want to do it, don't do it.
Bugger off.
Yeah.
Go and get, which I say, a normal job, which you work from 9 till 5 or whatever. You've got to worry about your bills, you worry about your mortgage. Anybody whinges, I have no truck with them at all. Even if they're injured or they've been dropped or, no, you don't realise. Mm. Please don't moan. Please realise how lucky you are.
Maintain perspective, basically.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, and now you're doing what I think is an absolutely amazing idea, which is this Play With A Legend thing which you founded, right?
Yes, it was a job. Josh Landy, I worked with him, this... satellite TV channel called Sports Night Live, and we got on really well. And then he asked me to play in a one of his mates was getting married in a stag event at Chesham Football Club. Yeah. Nigel went to all Arsenal fans. Nigel went to one side, myself in the other. So I went and played, had a few beers with him in the bar afterwards, had a good laugh.
Still got your pace? Or?
You sit a bit deeper as you get older. Thing is, it's easy to go and play. The easiest position in the world to go and play is right back.
Yeah.
Trust me, honestly, because no one marks you. Yeah. You're all right. Yeah. And you just let your winger go and then hope your goalkeeper gets it. He throws it to you and then you're off. So
yeah, okay.
And then played another few five-a-sides for him. And then Josh went off to Australia for about 2 or 3 months working. He come back and I was rung him up, said, I need a meeting with you. And we both met and we both basically at the same time said, there's a business idea in here somewhere. Mm. So what we did was we've got, I think it's about 120 players now where you have parties, you know, where it's stags, 18th, whatever they are, you know, 30th. The players that we've got ranges from like the players who just retired, like sort of Teddy Sheringham and Darren Anderton, Andy Cole, to old has-beens like myself, you know, just trying to think players like Graham Roberts and that sort of thing.
The reason I think it's a great idea is because it's something, just as a football fan, and obviously I'm of the age now where I've probably been to quite a lot of the stag weekends I've been on, but if I was to go one and someone said, oh, we're doing a game with a load of players like Teddy Sheringham, I'll be all over that. It's such a good idea.
Thing, and it happens, it's not even just like all the high-end players, it could be Cheltenham Town.
Yeah.
It could be a fan of Cheltenham who his favourite player was a centre-forward, we can get them.
Yeah.
And it's the wow factor because the people don't know that they're turning up.
Yeah,
so then
okay.
You go, so you play for an hour with 5 or 6 hours, but you always have to stay at least for an hour, hour and a half afterwards for have a few beers, tell the stories, what's going on.
Hardship, isn't it for you?
But all the lads, yeah, exactly. But all the lads are really good lads. But now that worked brilliantly and we had a lot of publicity, it was brilliant. But now it goes into afternoon speaking, into corporate events, into brand ambassadors, into betting ambassadors. Mm-hmm. Anything that anybody wants an ex-professional football for, we've got them, basically. We get them. So it's really a lot of branched out into something maybe we didn't think it was going
to
do.
So you've gone from being a professional player at the top of the game, Perry, to an entrepreneur.
I wouldn't say. I wouldn't say it was Dragon's Den.
No, I think you're very entrepreneurial.
No, it was both our ideas. I don't want to, you know.
Fair enough.
Yeah, so he's the brains.
Yeah.
I'm the link man.
You're the glamour, mate. You're the glamour.
I'm the link.
Quickly then, before you go, how do you look back on your football career? I mean, is there any regrets at all about not playing for England, for example? Or do you think that you... Because you said before, playing for Arsenal was equivalent to playing for England for
That's
you
better.
Anyway. Better for you.
No,
okay.
If it's your club, it's better because you're doing it every day, all the time. I mean, playing for England is the pinnacle because someone thinks at that time you're part of the best 11 or 22 or 23, what it is.
Sure.
But playing for your club has your boyhood club has a more emotional attachment because you're a fan playing. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So even with the career being cut a bit short, you're one of these sort of, I suppose, very rare players that can look back and say, do you know what? I haven't really got any regrets. I achieved everything I wanted to achieve. I won league titles. I played for the team I supported as a boy and I achieved a lot more than I'd ever dreamed I would.
Yeah, because regrets is a negative emotion.
Hmm.
I'm more like, that was brilliant. How fantastic was that?
What's
right
next?
Now, what am I doing next?
And
the only thing, again, I say to my boys, I might lack ability in certain things, but one thing that I'll never lack is the desire and the effort and application.
Mm.
Because if something goes wrong, you do media stuff now, whatever. Mm. If I'm on air and I do like media, if it's doing co-commentaries or Jim White Show, whatever, if I get something wrong or something goes wrong, if I've prepared beforehand, and it's just a mistake, I won't beat myself up because I think, you idiot, right? But at least I've done the prep first. It's just one of everybody makes mistakes. It's just what happens, especially the keyboard warriors nowadays. You make a mistake, you could make things up 15, 20 years ago on the radio.
No one
with facts and stats and figures. Yeah. No one, now it's like, oh no, I think you'll find that he got 15 goals in.
We both
games.
Know what that's like.
Right, so that comes on. If I hadn't done the prep and the application, then I'll be beside myself. I would be beside myself. So I just make sure I don't make myself feel like that. Mm. Do you know what I mean? I make sure that everything's... What you'll always get from me, hopefully the quality will be good, but you'll always get 100, but that's it.
And that's why you're so popular at Arsenal.
Well, maybe, I think what's happened in the long run, Arsenal fans look back and think, if I played for Arsenal, I'd have to play like Perry played because there was never going to be Dennis Bergkamp or never going to be Thierry Henry.
But
if it's your fan in a shirt... Then whether I played well, some days I'd give Stuart Pearce to run around. Other days my nan could mark me. It's like one of those things, up and down. But again, no one could ever fault my effort. That was the thing. And Arsenal fans then look back and think, do you know what he did? He ran around.
He tried really hard and he had a decent amount of ability as well.
He had a long throw as well.
Thanks very much, Fred. Appreciate your time.
Luke's been a pleasure.
Cheers, mate.
was a Stakhanov production.
People of the US, great news. The Formula One Circus is coming to Miami this weekend, and we've got everything you need to know on P1 with Matt and Tommy, the Formula One podcast from Stack. It doesn't matter if you're an F1 veteran or hardly watch a race. If you want a fun breakdown of the biggest stories from this weekend's race, we've got you covered. Join us for previews and reaction episodes from practice, qualifying, and the race itself, plus our full driver rankings podcast early next week. You'll be armed with enough info to make you look like a bona fide expert when the race rolls back around next year, or at least when you see your friends next week. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.